We change subject. We will not be talking anymore about equilibrium states, namely the ground state of a quantum system, but we will be talking about non-equilibrium states, so states that evolve in time. And to introduce what will be our main object of interest, I want to start with two lines from a very ancient poem by this guy called Heraclitus, 6th century before Christ. And since in the audience there is a Greek student, I would really like Yorgos to read these two lines for us.
Okay, is τα ψυχρά θέρετε, θερμόν ψύχετε. Υγρόν αβαίνετε, καψαλέον να τίζετε.
Thank you. And what does it mean? Okay, what does it mean? So correct me if my translation is wrong. And it says, cold things become warm. And what is warm cools. What is wet dries out, and the parched is moistened. Is it good?
Yeah.
Great. And so in this very ancient poem that was called On Nature, there is the most important law of physics that in no physics revolution, whether it has been relativity or quantum theory and nothing else that will ever happen, has ever been updated, which is this, that things reach equilibrium. What is warm cools down, what is cold warms up, your cold champagne becomes warm after a while, and your hot cup of coffee becomes cold, and what is wet becomes dry, and so on and so forth. Okay? So this is really remarkable because of one reason. First of all, really, this has never been updated, this law. And Arthur Eddington used to say, there is only one thing in physics that you should not try to contest, and it's the second principle of thermodynamics. That's really a sin. It's morally wrong. Everything else, you can mess up. You redefine what you mean by energy. You redefine what you mean by physical object, like we have done in quantum mechanics, or what is space and time, but not that. And the second reason why it's remarkable is because the laws of physics are time reversal. And this is obviously not time reversal. It's all about this process of going to equilibrium. And this is the problem of statistical mechanics. And we will face this problem in the quantum domain. So how is it possible that in quantum physics, which is time reversal, this happens? And so one thing that people do usually is to do, quantum systems, like any other physical systems, are not isolated. Okay? There is a buff. Okay, so you have your quantum system S, and then there is the environment, the bath, that is at some temperature and interacts with your system. And if you only look at the physics on your system due to the interaction with the bath, this physics of an open quantum system is not time reversal anymore. So it seems fine, okay? But then, you know, then you ask the question, wait a second, okay, but who put, how is it possible that the bath is a thermal equilibrium? Unless the bath evolved with other laws that are not those of quantum physics, how did it get to equilibrium? And the only way out is to imagine that there is a larger bath. And then you're worse off than before, right? Who put the larger bath in equilibrium? And this reminds me of a story. About 100 years ago, slightly more, William James, who was a philosopher and a psychologist, one of the founders of modern psychology, was actually giving a talk about cosmology. And for some reason, it's a public lecture in which I think he was trying to explain how shifting the position of, you know, of Earth from the center of the universe changed somehow the vision of the world and the psychological effects and philosophical effects that this had. Anyway, so he was talking about that, and a lady from the audience said, you know, stood up and said, this is, you know, all bull, because everyone knows that the Earth rests on the back of an elephant. And she, I think she was quoting some ancient Indian poem and probably misquoting it. And then William James said, okay, so, and but where does the elephant rest on? And she said, well, it's on the back of a very big tortoise. And where does the tortoise rest on? On the back of larger tortoise. And William just said, so, but what about this larger tortoise? And she said, it's tortoises all the way down. And yeah, so as funny and silly as this may seem, as long as we keep thinking that the answer to the problem of equilibration, thermalization, is open quantum systems, we are just doing exactly the same thing. We're asking for tortoises all bigger, larger and larger all the way down. And this is not acceptable. I hope you agree that this is morally not okay. So, all right, so what do we do? Okay, so we stick to the fact that we will describe time evolution in a closed quantum system. So we have a Hilbert space and a Hamiltonian. And so let me jot down a few notations that we will be using. Okay, so first of all, this is our Hamiltonian. And we will write the projectors onto the eigenstates of the Hamiltonian in this way. And we will always use the Hamiltonian in its spectral resolution in this way. And we will use density matrices. So when I write it not as a cat, it means it's the density matrix. And the density matrix evolved in time will be denoted in this way, where you can be fancy and call it a super operator, because it's an object that the two operators associates other operators. But this is nothing else but the a joint action, ut phi u dagger t, where obviously ut is generated by the Hamiltonian in this way. And we will always be considering Hamiltonians that are not dependent on time, because having a time-dependent Hamiltonian still in some way means, oh, there is something outside our system that is changing the parameters of the Hamiltonian, right? So the system would not be isolated, even in that case. So this is a time-independent Hamiltonian. And we will also make large use of the Heisenberg picture. And so operators evolve in this way, which is this. And okay, hat, because it's an operator. And when I will write, so sometimes I will also mix the notation, but it should be clear from the context. But I will try to be as tidy as possible. When I write it without the hat, I mean the expectation value. So A will be just the trace of A hat in phi. And AT will be the trace of A hat of T in phi, which is also the trace of A hat in phi T. And pretty much this equation is all the difference between the Heisenberg and Schrödinger picture. Okay. All right, okay, so these are our definitions, our notations, actually. And okay, so let's try to state what is the problem of equilibration. The problem of equilibration is trying to understand how in quantum mechanics you may start from some initial state phi, and this may evolve in time, and eventually come to a state phi ek that is steady, that does not evolve in time any longer. So first of all, let's start with a simple question, because we need to characterize what are the steady states of a quantum system. So who of you knows what are the steady states? How do you know that it will evolve or not? That is a very simple test.
Have to be eigenvectors of the Hamiltonian?
Come again?
Have to be eigenvectors of the Hamiltonian.
Well, definitely, if your state is an eigenvector of the Hamiltonian, it will not evolve. So that those are steady states. But are these all the steady states, or there is more? Does it completely characterize the states that do not evolve, or is there more?
Well, the fact that you asked this question means that probably there is more.
Yeah, there is more. Yes, yes. And but the answer is a slight generalization of what you said. Yeah. Also, the thermal state is steady, and more generally, the steady states are all those that commute with the Hamiltonian. Because you remember the evolution equation. Phi dot is minus I, the commutator of phi and the Hamiltonian. So if the commutator is zero, then phi dot is zero, which means it's a steady state. So if he commutes with the Hamiltonian, it means that it can be diagonalized in the same basis. So every steady state is some convex combination of the projectors of the Hamiltonian. So they will all have this form. The eigenvectors being a particular case of these pn's, right? Means that one of them is one and everything else is zero. If pn is the Boltzmann distribution or the Gibbs distribution, then you have the thermal state or anything else like that. Okay. So we want to understand how is it possible that in quantum mechanics, you start with a state, then it evolves in time, and then becomes something like this. Okay? Because this is the only steady state that we have. And I will show you that this is impossible because quantum mechanics is time reversal. And this process obviously is not time reversal. So you see, if this is a steady state, then obviously the limit for t going to infinity of phi of t is phi ek, right? Because eventually it equilibrates there and then doesn't evolve anymore, or does not evolve anymore. So also the infinite time limit is still that. Okay. And so let's see what happens. Okay. So let me consider the difference between the state at the time t and the equilibrium state. And let's compute the norm of this. And let's take the limit of t going to infinity. So if there is equilibration, then this quantity goes to zero, right? And let's see what this implies. So what is phi of t? It's just ut phi. Phi is my initial state. And what is phi ek? It's phi ek. However, phi ek is steady. So I can definitely evolve it with ut and it's still phi ek because it is steady. So I can do that. And then I can remember that u is a linear operator. And finally, that is a unitary operator. So it's norm preserving. Remember, we have used this fact a number of times when we were doing our Lieb Robinson bounds and things like that. So this is just equal to phi minus phi ek in norm. And that should take the limit for t going to infinity, but whether I put the limit or not doesn't matter because this does not depend on time anymore. So I can just get rid of the limit. It's two constant quantities. Okay. So if the state equilibrates, so if it becomes a steady state, so if this is zero, means that this difference in norm is zero, which means that the initial state was already steady state. So of course, if you start from a steady state, that's a steady state that will not change. That's trivial. But if you don't start from a steady state, it cannot equilibrate. Because if it equilibrates, it had always to be steady state. It was already the equilibrium. So equilibration, meaning you have something away from equilibrium that slowly at some point, like our glass of champagne gets too warm, this cannot happen in quantum mechanics. And yet it happens. And we don't like to use our tortoise theory. So what do we do? So you see, now we are in trouble, right? This calls for a solution because it looks like a paradox. But this is a very simple theorem and says the wave function shall not equilibrate in a closed quantum system. So I want to suggest him. What can we think about?
Observables.
Observables. Okay. That's very interesting, because Heraclitus is not referring to the wave function. He's referring to observables, right? He's observing that warm things become cool. OK, so what about observables? Now, there is a much more complicated theorem that says, OK, first of all, background. If you're in a closed quantum system, the spectrum of every operator will be pure point. Okay. And if you have pure point spectrum, every observable A of t, and by this I mean the expectation value, will be quasi-periodic. So this is a theorem by von Neumann that I do not have the time to prove. So quasi-periodic means that if you wait long enough, it will reach a value that is arbitrarily close to the initial value. And definitely, if something is quasi-periodic, it's not steady. Right? It goes back almost to the initial value, as close as you want, so it's not steady. It never stops evolving. OK. So now it's getting tougher, right? So is there still something that is compatible with what Heraclitus and everyone else observed since the beginning of times and quantum mechanics?
States equilibrate.
The reduced state equilibrates. This is very interesting, but this looks very dangerously like our tortoise theory, right? Because it's the reduced state. And therefore, but it's interesting because you are not claiming that the bath is at equilibrium, right? You're not claiming that. You're just saying the reduced state equilibrates in spite of the fact that everything is not equilibrating. Well, that's possible. We will discuss this case. And but in order to discuss that case, basically so somehow your solution is a reformulation of somehow the same problem. Okay, saying that the reduced state will equilibrate is the same thing than saying the observables that have support on the reduced state equilibrate. Do you agree? And the problem is, but we know that the observables are quasi-periodic. So in some sense, also the reduced state is quasi-periodic, in fact, in a very strict sense. So that's a very good way of thinking, but we have not solved the problem yet. So how is it possible that these local objects, whether the reduced state or the observable that has support on it, equilibrate in spite of the fact that they're quasi-periodic? We are still tainted by this quasi-periodicity. So let me show you a picture. I can get rid of this. This is time, and this is the expectation value of A as a function of time. At the beginning, it starts somewhere, and then does something like this. And from now on, repeats. Let me do this package a little smaller. So this evolution is quasi-periodic. So it's compatible with our theorems about unitarity and Pierpoint spectrum and everything else. Okay. So this can happen. If this happens, and I ask you to measure A, what value will you find? Apart from the initial transient time, when the state, when, you know, the champagne does not get warm in a second, right? But let's say from now on, from this point on, what you will see is that almost always has this value. And it is true, so maybe quite often as a value that is different from that value, but the difference is very small, so that is almost not observable. Or when it gets a very different value, does it for a very small time. So again, almost always, it has a typical value. So you see that typicality in time, in this case, is compatible with quasi-periodicity. If I look at the temperature of my glass of champagne, and it is almost always, after a while, 23 degrees, well, that's what I observe. Because what happens almost always is what we observe. We never get to observe what happens almost never. So this is called equilibration in probability. We say that the probability of observing a value that is different from a given typical value, this probability is very small. And in fact, it would be great if it's not only very small, but goes to zero in the thermodynamic limit. So that we have, you know, that's how we understand statistical mechanics. The asymptotic properties of a large system are captured by the thermodynamic limit. In that limit, we say that probability is zero. But for every finite system, it's just very, very small, in a way that is, as a matter of fact, not observable. Okay. So let's see under which conditions this is possible, if there are conditions such that this is possible. So far, it does not look like we have violated anything, so it could be possible, because this is still quasi-periodic. By the way, in literature, these little spikes are called revivals. And the big one, when you get back there, is called recurrence. And the time at which the recurrence happens is called the Poincaré time. And the Poincaré time is proven to be the exponential of the exponential of the dimension of the Hilbert space. So it doesn't happen. Okay. Unless you have a very, very small system, if you have this kind of situation. Of course, you can easily try to cook up an example in which you have many particles and everything is very nicely periodic for some observable, and it evolves like a sine. Okay, so try to do that. Okay, so let's say that this value exists. What does it look like? What value is it? Can we characterize this typical value if it exists? So now I need a little bit of creativity from you. So let's say that there is a typical value. I think you can guess what value it should be. Just from the picture, you don't need anything mathematical. something is almost always has a certain value, that value is what? It's the average. Who said that? Great. It's the average. It's the, in this case, it's the time average, right? Because our ensemble of values is in the time domain. Okay? So it is the infinite time average. So we say that the typical value, a bar, should be the limit on infinite time of 1 over t. A of t, dt. Of course, this expression actually defines the time average of every observable, including phi, of every Hermitian operator, including phi. And by using this, you see that this is the same than writing the trace of A operator onto phi bar. Do you agree? So phi bar is the time averaged state. And now let's look at what this time average is. Okay, so first of all, phi t is nothing else but the sum over n and m, phi n m, e to the minus I, e n minus e m, t, e n, e m. So if you write it in the basis of the Hamiltonian, I've just wrote a joint action u dagger ta ut in the basis of the Hamiltonian. I think you're familiar with this expression, right? And now we want to take the time average of this. So again, it is t very large, 1 over t. And then we are integrating this in time, which means that actually, we are into, so I can use a more compact notation and saying I'm integrating this object in time. You agree? That's the only part that depends on time. And the bar means the time average. The bar means what is defined there. The limit for t. Okay. Now, so from now on, I will use this hypothesis that our Hamiltonian is non-degenerate. Okay? Before we go ahead, do you think that this condition is a very strong condition or not on the Hamiltonians? It's like it's a very special Hamiltonian, the Hamiltonian that does not have degeneracy. You say no. What can you argue about that?
It's, I mean, if you have like a large realistic system with impurities and whatever, then you can imagine that the chance of two energies being exactly the same is kind of measure zero in some sense.
That's true. Why do you think that this chance is small? This is a very good physical intuition. Can we make this? But you know, in these things, sometimes, for instance, if you use some reasoning that turns out to be a Poisson process, it would not turn out to be like you say. But you are right. But there is a more solid argument. The more solid argument is, to what does a degeneracy correspond? To a symmetry, okay? Now, symmetry in the Hamiltonian is something fine-tuned, because anything random would spoil the symmetry. So, in general, Hamiltonians are not degenerate. So this is not a very strong assumption. Okay, so if this is not degenerate, then two energies are the same only if they correspond to the same state. So in that case, this is for when these two energies are the same, then this for those cases, this average is 1, right? Because this is 0. And you get phi n, en. So the diagonal part of phi bar does not evolve in time. Then we have the off-diagonal part. Okay, but if you have the off-diagonal part, now this is an oscillating term, right? Is the sum of sines and cosines, and the average of sines and cosines over infinite time is 0. Always. So this is calculus 1. So that's it. Okay, so very easily we discover that the equilibrium value, the wannabe equilibrium value for our process is this state. This state, look what it is. It is the diagonal state in the basis of the Hamiltonian, where the diagonal elements are the initial populations of your initial state, phi n n. So whereas your initial state was phi 1 1, phi n n, and then you had all these off-diagonal elements, like phi n m, the state that will represent the expectation value of an observable that has equilibrated in probability will be just the diagonal one. So it's the same state as before, in which I have erased the off-diagonal elements. It's called completely defaced state. And of course, check, so this is an easy exercise, that this can be written as the sum on n of your initial state, that is the full one, projected down by this pi. This is pi. More generally, if you have a basis B, I, and the projectors onto this basis are II, you can call the completely defaced state in the base B this object, which is nothing else but. So this is the completely defaced state in the basis of the Hamiltonian. So if there is equilibration in probability, the typical value of A will be A bar, which is in turn the trace of A operator onto phi bar, which is nothing else but the sum over n of the probability Pn. Pn is nothing else but phi nn, the population of the state in the nth eigenstate of the Hamiltonian at the beginning times n. Because this is the probability that I am in that state. So, and what is the expectation value of A in that state is ANN, A11. Because this is the diagonal element of A in the basis of the Hamiltonian. So the expectation value of A in the state N of the Hamiltonian, eigenstate N of the energy. So you see, we don't know yet if and when this can happen, but if it happens, the equilibrium, the typical value must be this. It has a very simple form. It is just the value that would have in a given eigenstate averaged over the probability of being in that eigenstate at the beginning. Okay. Now let's try to tackle the question of when this happens. So you see that this can happen, that you have typical values, in two ways. Okay, so first of all, how do we characterize that this probability of being away from the average is very small? And you have to be creative and tell me what physical quantity tells you what, that this probability of being away from the average is small. The variance. Very good. The variance. So we want to show under which conditions A of t minus a bar squared on average is small. In this case, we are talking about time evolution, so these averages are time averages. If instead we were looking at typicality in another ensemble, that would be a generic ensemble average. In this case, I reserve the bar for now for the temporal average. So it's the temporal variance that should be small. And if I look at A of t, which is the trace of A hat in phi of t, you will see, because phi of t is this guy, and then I have to trace it with A, right? So it contains the matrix elements of A between n and m. And those that evolve in time are the off-diagonal matrix elements of A between A and n and m. So one first way for an observable to equilibrate is to say that En A Em is very small, so that the observables that we're interested in, they do not connect different eigenstates of the Hamiltonian. So this is part of what is called ETH hypothesis. Eigenstate thermalization hypothesis. Eigenstate thermalization hypothesis says that observables behave thermal in the eigenstates, which means two things. One, the time-dependent part doesn't count because it only depends on this term, and we ask it to be very small. two, the time non-dependent part, so the diagonal part, which is the trace of A onto phi bar, which again is nothing else but the sum of n of A n n with these probabilities. So the second request of this hypothesis is that this object looks thermal. It's that taking this average is like taking this average with this probability distribution. So if this happens, and it's not very clear right now how this can happen, but if this happens, then by fiat, A not only equilibrates, but it also thermalizes. Because not only equilibrates because the time-dependent part doesn't count, but the typical value is also the thermal value. So as you can see, ETH is not a very profound statement. Just saying, I assume that it has a thermal value. Then, you know, you need to check whether this is true for the system that you're studying. However, there is something more general that is less ad hoc than ETH, and it is what I want to show you now. For this to be small, okay? So that we have equilibration in probability. And I'm not saying that this equilibrium value is the thermal one. I'm just saying it equilibrates to some value, which is this value. And I'm not making any other assumption on the fact that this could represent the thermal average. And this theorem that is due to a guy called Riemann says that this object for a non-degenerate Hamiltonian with one more assumption that I will spell out in a second is upper bounded by the norm of A times the trace of phi bar square. And so before we prove this theorem, which is a beautiful theorem, let's try to understand what we are saying. Look, we have here our initial state. Without much loss of generality, we can imagine that our initial state is a pure state. Okay? So we start with a pure state. The time average will erase the off-diagonal elements. And now you see that this state has not the form 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. So it's not pure anymore. You remember what we said yesterday about purity? And what is the purity? It's the sum of these phi squares. So the infinite time average is making our state from pure to not pure. And I'm saying the time fluctuations are upper bounded by this and this purity. So if the time average makes my state very non-pure, then it can, the time fluctuations cannot be very large. And now you see that the only reason why the time average, the only thing that there is behind the time average making the defaced state very not pure is all contained in the initial populations. So if my initial state has, say, components only on one eigenstate, well, then this will be still 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, will be very pure. If my initial state has amplitudes over only two or three eigenstates, okay, you know, let's say it's one third, one third, one third. Well, then the purity will be 1/9 plus 1/9 plus 1/9, which is 1/3. So this means that my time fluctuations are bounded from above by 1/3, which is not a very small number. So I can have a lot of time fluctuations. But if my initial state is very spread out in the basis of the Hamiltonian, then the purity is very small and it cannot fluctuate. This theorem connects something that is not physical to something that is physical. Let me explain what I mean. This process, the defacing, which is given by the time averaged, is not something physical. I took the time average. So it's the result of a calculation. I'm not saying that the time evolution will erase these things. In fact, the time evolution is unitary, and unitary operators preserve the purity. So unitary time evolution is not doing that. This is a map that is not unitary. It's like you have something from outside that is erasing this information. So this is not physical. All I'm saying is that if there is an equilibrium value, it must be the value that is taken into this state. That's why this theorem is powerful, because this is what really happens. These are the time fluctuations of the time evolved state that is evolving unitarily. And I'm saying these fluctuations are upper bounded by this person here, by this purity, that is the one that comes out from this mathematical procedure, that is the defacing in the basis of the Hamiltonian, the time average. Okay? So if this theorem is true, we are done to understanding equilibration. Because all we need to do is that our initial state is not the superposition of few eigenstates, but it is, you know, a superposition that is very spread in the basis of the Hamiltonian. And then if my observable is not very large, so it is order one, this is upper bounded by this number. But how small can be the purity? 1 over the dimension of the Hilbert space. So let's call H plus the subspace of the Hilbert space on which my initial state has a support. Saying that I'm very spread in the basis of the Hamiltonian means that the dimension of this space is not a negligible fraction of the dimension of the full Hilbert space. So it's still a number that grows exponentially with the number of particles that you have. So being spread enough means that this goes like e to the minus n, where n is the number of particles. So time fluctuations are very, very, very small. Okay, since I have 4 minutes left, and I don't want to butcher this proof because it's very instructive, it's when you understand this proof, you gain a new theoretical tool that you can use in many other contexts. This time about how time evolutions go, I don't want to start it now and, you know, do it too quickly, so I'll take some questions. Yes? I think it's the norm of A. Oh, you're right. Maybe it's the square. Yeah. it's the square, yeah. There are a few typos right now in the lecture notes. I will correct them by the end of the day. There are a couple of N and J's that are K and I or something like that. I will take care of them. Yes?
Why is it that the weight, it was an theory to me, why is it that the weight of the observable A, Pn, has to be Boltzmann?
Oh, so this is, so there is no why. This is an hypothesis. ETH just says, if this average is equal to the thermal average, oh, well, then the equilibration value is the thermal value. And you just request it. So now the point is this hypothesis satisfied by realistic systems that we encounter? And you know, then you try Hubbard model and you check. Okay, then you take another model and you check. And there has been a lot of attention. This is difficult to do because it means that you know how to diagonalize the model, right? So, or numerically, you cannot simulate a very large model, so it's not easy. So this sign here, when you do things on a small system, this is weak because they become very similar in the thermodynamic limit. So from the numerical point of view, researchers that try to prove these things have to summon, you know, other arguments to show that actually, you know, they do finite size scaling, they try different sizes. It's technically a hard subject, right? Because you are trying to make inferences to a region that you cannot explore. Point is that knowing the eigenstates, you see that you have here, this is very hard. If you could try to do this for our Ising model, because there you know the exact form of your eigenstates. And so this is a very interesting exercise that you can try. And you can try to see what kind of value you get. And maybe you can develop, I don't want to tell you the answer, maybe you can develop some intuition about whether they're like the thermal values or not, and we can talk about that. Yeah?
What if you have some degeneracy that's not due to topological order, but is still not affected by disorder, like time reversal symmetry or like sublattice symmetry?
Okay, so if you have some degeneracy, whether it is fine-tuned or protected by symmetry or any other mechanism, then it really depends on what are you looking at. Because if you're observable, so say that you have two states that are degenerate, okay? The state psi 1 and the state psi 2. So whether I have the probability of being in this state or in this state will oscillate in time. Okay, and it will oscillate with this sinusoidal form. Now, the point is, what is that you're observing? If your observable does not care about whether you are in psi 1 or in psi 2, you will not see that. But let's say that your observable is this. Well, then you will see it, that it's oscillating. So then you can do a bit of statistics in the sense that, okay, if I have just a few degeneracies, and in the end the degeneracies are not many, because you have only so many symmetries that can protect you, right? It's not, they are nothing with respect to the dimension of the Hilbert space. The likelihood that you pick an observable that is looking at that degeneracy is very small. And you know from the beginning that those, of course, will see no equilibration. So this means that not only non-degeneracy is a very good assumption, because in general you don't have degeneracies, but even when you put some degeneracies, typically observables will not see that. And so this is the argument. I could make it more precise, but so I'm putting myself in the simple case of no degeneracy, because there is not much of loss of generality actually in this situation, because the degenerate case is easily dealt with. Unless you have an extensive degeneracy. So if you have an extensive degeneracy, then that's another problem. And in fact, this is what happens, at least classically, in spin glasses that evolve very slowly. You have many states that are almost degenerate. The other thing that I'm hiding here is what's the equilibration time. Because now imagine that you have two states that are not degenerate, but that are very close. So it is only in the infinite time limit that no matter across the R, the infinite time average goes to zero. So this kind of theorems is just saying us that the time fluctuations, if I observe on an infinite time, are very small. It's not telling us anything about from what point on equilibration has occurred. Okay, so we will get a very interesting result, which is this one. This tells us under which conditions equilibration may occur, but it's not telling us when this will occur. We will need additional assumptions for that. Okay.